And so there were quite a few community members and even some of our board members who raised a point of creating this prison pipeline.
Yes.
A pipeline of prison, you know? Yes. And what does that do socially and emotionally for children that have to walk in a building each and every day that has metal detectors? And I get it. As a Black female, I get it. But what I said then and what I would say today is, for me, it's an additional layer of safety. And that's still not 100%. But if anything would ever happen in any one of the buildings that parents send students to me to protect, I want to be able to assure parents that I've done everything possible to try to prevent any fatalities.
And here we go. You're listening to the Kings Can Move On podcast with your hosts, Jason Stewart and Frank Rainey.
Hey, welcome everybody to the Kings Can Move On podcast. We got another wonderful episode here. You have one of your co-hosts right here, Frank the Tank, a.k.a. Big Reno. What's happening?
What's up, Big Reno? It's your boy Jay, a.k.a. Wood. What's happening, Kings Can Move On podcast? We got a guest in the house tonight. Reno, you want to introduce our guest?
Yeah, we got a special guest in the house tonight. Somebody I've known for blah, 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 blah years, since middle school, grown up with her. She's become a really good friend, and she's out here doing big things. Please, everybody, welcome my friend. I call Yoda, but we gonna go by her professional name, Dr. Yolanda Cargill. What's happening?
Hello. Good evening.
Welcome aboard. Thank you for coming on.
Welcome to the show.
I'm honored that you would have me.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
I ain't seen you on that list. How long?
It's always a pleasure to see you guys.
It's been since high school? Not high school, but the reunion. One of the reunions, right?
Probably the very first one.
Yeah. I didn't make the second one.
Yeah. And you got up out of here like real quick after high school. You said, you know, forget Kansas City, right?
I went to undergrad in Warrensburg.
Did you?
Yes. And then after I graduated in 95, I moved to Wisconsin because I had a job before I graduated.
I was going to ask you what took you to Milwaukee, but I think you just told me. So what was the job you had in Milwaukee you took?
So my undergrad was in social work. I graduated from CMSU then in Warrensburg, Missouri, with a bachelor's in social work. And I was hired at V. Carter Development Group in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. But what even made me apply for jobs in Milwaukee, my parents, when they were first married, moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My father's family lived there and my parents lived there for a few years. And then shortly after, well, I was born in Kansas City, so they moved to Kansas City before I was born. And so we traveled there for family trips and there was a connection there. So I applied for jobs in both Kansas City and Milwaukee close to graduation and was hired in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for my first job.
You know what? And one little tidbit that I don't know if you remember, Yoda, but your pops and my pops grew up together.
Yes, I do remember that. They work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
I remember he used to bring me over your house when he was going to visit.
Back in the day. You know, about a year or two ago, right?
Right.
Y'all do go back then, don't you?
Yeah.
I've never been to Milwaukee. Yolanda, what's it like?
It's beautiful summers, cold winters. It's a lot to do in Milwaukee. Well, Wisconsin is nice, period. Like north, it's there's a lot of places to visit, like wineries and Door County and different places, bed and breakfasts to go. I'm trying to think, like different water parks and that nature, not far from Chicago. So if you like to shop and travel, We would jump on the train and travel to Chicago, about a 2-hour train ride from Milwaukee to Chicago. Wasn't bad.
Yeah, and I've been to Chicago. They do have beautiful summers.
Yeah.
Brutal winters, but
lots of festivals in the summer, but the winters are brutal.
How long were you there?
20 years.
Oh, man. No. It's too cold. Wow. Well, welcome back home. I know you've been back about 10, 15 years, though, right?
Well, I moved back home in 2015. I moved there. So it was probably 19 years. I graduated in 95 and then moved back home in 2015.
So what brought you back to KC?
Hickman Middle School District. The superintendent then, Dr. Dennis Carpenter, hired me as director of student services in Hickman Mill. So our alma mater hired me. So that was just the ultimate honor to be hired as director of student services in Hickman Mills.
That's full circle.
Was Hickman closed down at that time, or did they merge Hickman at that time, or was it after you came?
No, it was already merged. When I arrived, that was done under the leadership of Dr. Marge Williams. She was superintendent when the enrollment started to decline and they had to make a decision of which high school to choose. And of course, they chose the best.
They chose the best, baby. They chose the Ruskin Eagles.
Always a great day to be an Eagle.
I saw that they did a couple of things as far as remodeling there, so that's pretty cool. But they shut a couple of schools down. You know what? And I know we're going off the questions, but quick question: why does a school shut schools down?
All right. And so some of that started when I was superintendent in Hickman Mills. It was a decline in enrollment, and you don't take it lightly. We work with a research firm to study the enrollment trends 10, 20 years out, who just, they know the factors and the formulas to really project out births as well as how many students will be in your area and the trends in terms of how people are migrating in the area and transitioning out. And the prediction was that our enrollment would significantly decline, projecting out over the next 15 years. And we had already seen that even during the time that I was there. The 5 years that I worked in Hickman Mills, I had seen the enrollment decline. And based on budget and finances, we needed to look at ways to capture more dollars and make our expenses match our revenue. And so you close a site, you save money. And so we looked at areas where our students were living and looked at boundary lines and that piece and made the decision to close to the elementary building.
Yeah, my elementary and my junior high is gone now. I saw they even have it up for sale. The junior high school is up for sale right now. Smith Hill is up for sale.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to buy them and turn it into condos or something.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, you know, when I moved out south and came to Ruskin, it seemed like everybody was coming out south and their schools was like growing, right? And now enrollment is down where you're closing schools down. Where is everybody going? Further out?
You know what? From my conversations with the superintendent in like Green Valley, it's almost like they can't build schools quick enough. I hope my computer doesn't log off. It's saying I might have a
what, you got an update going?
An update. I hope it doesn't.
You can hit snooze or
I'll keep watching it. Either like going up north, Green Valley, and like Raymore, Peculiar.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting.
Okay.
But Green Valley for sure.
We my daughter actually practices out there sometimes, and I didn't realize it had grown as much as it is. This house is being built everywhere. And I don't know if you've ever been out to Pleasant Hill, but they are building maybe about 500 homes over out in Pleasant Hill. So it seems like they're spreading, everybody's spreading out, but growing at the same time.
Yeah, but I used to work with the superintendent. The superintendent in Pleasant Hill used to work in Hickman Mills.
Okay, cool. Okay. If you're enjoying this podcast, Don't forget to subscribe and like us on YouTube and rate and follow us on your favorite podcast platform. And now you're the superintendent in Center, right?
Center School District, not far from Hickman Mills. In fact, we partner. And so we share students and programs based on, it's the three district partnership. Center, Grandview, and Hickman Mills. Each of the three districts all have one high school. And so through our partnership with Kauffman Foundation, they issue each of the three districts grants to expand on our real world learning efforts, to expand opportunities we provide for students around college and career readiness, creating opportunities for internships to earn credit and connect with professionals and careers that they aspire, we are able to partner. And so in Center, we offer an opportunity for students to take courses in fire safety. And so by the time students graduate, they've taken a lot of their preparatory classes to take the fireman test at Hickman Mills. Nice. They offer a performing arts pathway. And then Grandview is advanced manufacturing. And the students get to make those choices. So based on their interests, half of their day is spent in their home district, and then the second half of their day is spent in taking classes in the other district if they choose to.
I love that. Yeah. I know that one of my daughter's soccer buddies' mom, she is an administrator in Lee Summit. And she was talking about she was bringing into some type of career path for our young kids, to where by the time high school comes out, they will probably have a very good idea on what they're going to do. And they may not even need college, or if they do, they're so far advanced to credit wise that they already have a leg up when they go to college. So I think
it's cool. Definitely a bragging point in Kansas City. It's a citywide goal that by the year 2030, all of our students across Kansas City will graduate having earned a market value asset. And so that's either dual credit, internship, a client connected project where they're finishing high school with these experiences. And that just increases their employability skills as well as their experiences, and leverages them for internships, jobs, prepares them for college, and they have a better awareness in terms of what they want to pursue after high school. And then a lot of our students are also taking college classes. And so they have the potential to have earned their associate degree before they complete high school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. And you said that's across KC School District too?
Yeah. So, a lot of the districts through Kauffman, you know, Kauffman does a phenomenal job of offering grants and opportunities. And with Kauffman Foundation, as well as another organization here in Kansas City that works with a lot of the urban districts, Prep KC. And so they partner with us as urban districts to connect us with the professionals in a wide variety of career fields. But through these partnerships with the organizations, we're providing multiple opportunities for students, and teachers are able to connect with the professionals. And so teachers are participating in externships. So they're working with professionals, engineers, firemen, different fields, to create and replicate those learning experiences in the classroom. And so teachers are good at teaching, but they may not understand the other piece of it. So working with the professionals and creating projects in the classrooms that students can participate in.
Okay. Okay. How do you make sure you don't lose a child?
High expectations for all, but then for me, more importantly, is modeling what that looks like. And so even before I was ever offered the job as superintendent at Hickman Mills or Center, as student services director, I made it my business to be connected with kids. Mm-hmm. And so I host a girls group at the high school. I did a Ruskin called Sisters Inspiring Sisters, SIS. And I got the idea from my time in Wisconsin working as student services director there, and members of my team hosted the same group where they were meeting with the young girls at the middle school and the high school, and just talking with them on a weekly, monthly basis around just goal setting, relationships, conflict, a host of items, bringing in speakers. And so I've done that. And as superintendent, I've asked for members of my cabinet team to mentor students. I mentor kids. Like I said, my girls group, I'm meeting with them on a monthly basis at the high school, you know, who has been super, super helpful in helping me just continue to expand my program. That's Shay Moore on the radio host on KPRS, also my sorority sister.
You're a Delta, right?
Yes, best sorority in the world.
Okay, all right. Nathan would not agree with you on that one.
Yes, Nathan would.
Oh, no, Nathan is a Delta.
Yes,
I thought Nathan was an AKA.
Nathan would. Her aunt, Therese Harvey. You better
Therese
get it
is
right.
A Delta?
Yeah,
I know.
You better get it right.
Therese be on there.
We're going to get her on. Yeah, we got to get her on.
You better get it right. So, yes, so Shay Moore, she has connected me with some phenomenal African-American women in Kansas City who has served as guest speakers for my group. They, including like Julie Jones, she also, they all have contributed at Ruskin, at Center High School. So feature topics, just relationships, goal setting, entrepreneurship. Just a host of topics. And it's wonderful. Like just last week, I hosted our last session at Center High School. We did a vision board session. And I brought I asked a Center alumni to come in. She works at CSD Credit Union. And she spoke with the ladies around financial literacy, talked to them about saving money. But then also we all created vision boards. And that's just my way of giving back and just trying not to lose students and talking with them about staying connected in the school community, but also showing that they have an adult in the district, adult in the building that believes in them and wants to know that they're successful. And so I try to be visible and present. Like, I appreciate you guys being flexible tonight to meet later so I could attend the award ceremony at the high school. And so I try to model that so that I'm not asking staff to do anything that I'm not willing to do. And more importantly, that they haven't seen me doing, you know? And so that's important. It is about building relationships. And more importantly for me, being the first African-American superintendent in Center School District, when I think about that, just my time as a student in Hickman Mills, I never even imagined that I would be a superintendent.
You never even wanted to be a superintendent, huh?
Never even I didn't aspire to be an educator. You know, I'm a second career educator. My degree is in social work. Mm-hmm. And so it's just an interaction or a conversation or a meeting with me as a Black female superintendent over the course of a school year, or for some girls who may start with me in sixth grade and work with me all through their middle school and high school year, if I can inspire them to try, to set goals, and just aspire to be the best version of themselves, I've done my job.
And that's a good job you're doing, because I don't recall having any of those type of things available to us when we were in school.
No, not at all. Not at all.
You're talking about vision boards, you're talking about goal setting, you're talking about things that was not even a thought when I was coming through school.
And you know what? And I thought about that. And I think times have changed. You know, we grew times. Our parents supported us in the manner that we needed at home. And our villages were different. Mm-hmm. And so leaders, educators have needed to adapt based on the needs of children. And I'm not at all saying my parents don't show up for their children, but there are so many different competing things where we needed to shift how we showed up. And so there are times where parents may not be able to be as involved as they like because of demands or just with jobs and that nature. And so if we can step in and support in a way that helps to leverage what they're doing at home, that's what I'm here for. And
you know,
it's an additional voice.
I remember both of my boys went to Center. My oldest son graduated from there.
Okay.
And I can remember that he was in softball. I mean, not softball, excuse me. Thinking about my daughter. So, football it was either tryouts or something. And me and my ex-wife went to go see him. And I can remember it was one little boy. When I tell you, he was lighting up the field just in practice, just catching everything. I mean, catching, running, juking everybody. But mm-hmm. then his mom came. And I was just like, man, this little cat is bad. His mom came. And it disappointed me and her at that time because she walked down there, cussed him out. And because he didn't do something, maybe clean his, I don't know if he left or something, cussed him out, wasn't there for his practice, came up there to specifically cuss him out and then walked out talking about, y'all know how I do it. And it hurt my heart because mm-hmm. I don't know where that young man is now, but it just I looked at it like, what could he have become? Could he have become more if mm-hmm. he would have had better support?
Yeah.
You know, to that, you had a question, Frank, about parent involvement, right? Mm-hmm. How big of an involvement would you say Black parents, especially Black fathers, are right now in your estimation, Yolanda?
Well, in Center, we have high parent involvement, and that I am extremely grateful of. I appreciate it. When I was a middle school teacher, I would say to my parents I was an eighth grade teacher at the eighth grade completion ceremony, because I would notice, and talking to my friends who taught high school, that parent involvement began to waver as students transitioned to high school. And so my ask for all of my eighth grade parents would always be even more involved in high school. You know, don't relinquish that. Stay engaged, stay involved. Know what your child is doing on social media. Know your children's friends. Connect with them, meet with them, because you just don't know how many pressures that children are dealing with day to day, just in school, and what kids are bringing to school, what they're doing at parties and that, and just having that open line of communication that you can tell me whatever, you can call me no matter what time of night it is to come be, like, making sure that children know that no call will be too late mm-hmm. or too annoying for me to come stop what I'm doing to come get you. Like, kids have to know that, but parents have to make sure that, you know, their child knows that they're understanding, and there can be this real judgmental mentality where there's this fear of letting their parents down. Like, of course, kids make mistakes and they're going to disappoint, but in the end, I'm still going to love you. We're going to work through it. Like, being really clear around what those messages sound like, and being able to show that so kids know, you know what, even when I think I messed up real big, we were able to work through it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be important, because I walk through the high schools and middle schools on a daily basis, and it's a lot of temptations out here mm-hmm. that children are dealing with, and they need that parental support, adult support, and role models to help keep them on track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Do you think that we need to just bring paddling back? Like I got one. Listen, one day when we got it, I got in trouble. Me and Taurus Block,
at
we
Smith
got in
Hill.
Trouble at Smith Hill.
I remember.
Mr. Brown said, look, you either get in the paddle or we calling your mom. I'm like, you call your mom and daddy. I'm like, y'all don't call my mom and daddy, because I'm going to get it worse. Y'all give me these three spots and get me about my business. Give me on my way.
Mm-mm. No, I wouldn't even, I couldn't even pick up no paddle and whip any kids. But you know what? There are some Missouri districts who still have paddling.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I couldn't even imagine
it. I thought that was outlawed.
Yeah.
But you couldn't touch
if somebody
kids.
Tried to do that to
they're,
my daughter.
They're like rural. They're not. City okay. or suburban yeah. districts, okay. not at all.
Okay,
that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Like, no,
high, huh? That's funny.
So what would you say, like, as far as government involvement? I know you said that you guys get grants, and actually, I want to say government involvement and school board. Back when my kids were were, my boys were younger, they were in the Kansas City School District, started off at the Kansas City School District. And I can just always remember the board, the school board, and the superintendent butted heads, seemed like it was daily. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that with a challenging, if you have a challenging school board, and how do you deal with the government that tells you that you can or cannot do something?
Okay. So school boards in Missouri, we have 7-member boards unless like there's state involvement, and there, I think it's like 9-member boards if the state is involved. You just have to work at building a relationship. Like ultimately for the good of children, you got to work on building the relationships. And I'm lucky here in Center that I have a good working relationship with the Board of Education. Do we agree on every single item? No. Mm-hmm. But we can disagree on a topic and leave a board meeting with, okay, see you tomorrow. Don't forget the award ceremony is taking place. Or what are you doing? Well, see you. We're having coffee. And that's the type of relationship I want with members of the board. Is grounded in respect for the work that we do. And I see my job as serving students and supporting staff to best serve children. And as the Board of Education, we are a governance team. So they're the board and they're my supervisor. So I have 7 people who serve as one voice who are my supervisors. And so we have to work together to get the work of the district completed. So I try not to make it controversial. So I work with my team to make sure that the board has the answers that they need for each of our board meetings. And we're providing information in a timely manner. We're answering questions. If we need to have a meeting, let's have a meeting. Let's talk about it. Like, let me make this job as easy as possible for you. Because one, you're doing it free of charge. Mm-hmm. You're volunteering your time. And we need you to get the work done and serve kids. And so I just try to make it as best possible. And if I feel like something is controversial, let's talk it through and what data or information can I provide you in advance of the board to help you make a better decision. Now, as it relates to the state or government. So for the state of Missouri, we are governed in terms of education entity by the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, also known as DESE.
Okay. And you guys are accredited, right?
Yes, we are fully accredited. And our state superintendent is Margie Van Deven. So there's about 534 school districts in Missouri, if I'm not mistaken. And so they set the standards and expectations for all of the districts in Missouri, write policies for us that we adopt on an annual basis with changes. And they just keep watching legislation and federal laws, as well as different bills and legislation that pass here on an annual basis and adopt. And so we are governed by our board as well as state standards. So either you're meeting state or federal guidelines. With federal, you have money coming in through like title funds, federal grants and that nature. And then on a per student basis through the state. And we also get money through our assessed valuation within our residential area. So your taxes that you pay, you know, some of that money goes to the school district, to the libraries, the fire department, that piece.
Okay.
So on a follow-up to the school board and the government involvement, you know, we just had this mass shooting in Buffalo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe think about the shootings we have in the schools as well. And if you can, share with us the discussions you may have in regarding, you know, keeping our children safe in school.
Absolutely, Jason. It's timely. So starting in December of 2021, I started having a conversation with the Center Board of Education, as well as administrators, around the possible use of metal detectors at our secondary school. So we have an alternative school, middle school, and a high school. Started the conversation around the high school first, and then we brought in our alternative school.
And the why is around just the consideration or thought that weapons could be being brought into our buildings. Mm-hmm. And there we surveyed our students, our staff, as well as parents. Through all of the three stakeholder groups, largely all three groups supported the use of metal detectors at the high school and the alternative school. However, at that time, there was a lot of controversy around it. One, first time ever, the use of metal detectors in Center School District. And so there were quite a few community members and even some of our board members who raised a point of creating this prisoner pipeline.
Yes.
The pipeline of prison, you know? Yes. Mm-hmm. And what does that do socially and emotionally for children that have to walk in a building each and every day that has metal detectors? And I get it. As a Black female, I get it. But what I said then and what I would say today is, for me, it's an additional layer of safety. And that's still not 100%.
Right.
But if anything would ever happen in any one of the buildings that parents send students to me to protect, I want to be able to assure parents that I've done everything possible to try to prevent any fatalities. And I would hate for something to happen and I have to say to a parent, I'm sorry that we didn't have, you know, metal detectors in our building. And so it was a two-part process. And when we discussed it with the Board of Education in January, there was not leverage, or we didn't move forward with metal detectors. Just last night, mm-hmm. I had on the agenda and made a recommendation to the Board of Education to add metal detectors beginning next year at the middle school, the alternative school, and the high school, and the board approved 5-2.
Okay.
And so starting next year, but you know, I think about Kansas City Public Schools, middle school student.
Do they already have
and that fatality? I don't wish that on any parent, on any of my colleagues, the superintendents. Like,
does the Kansas City School District have metal detectors approved for their schools?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If you're enjoying this podcast, don't forget to subscribe and like us on YouTube and rate and follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
In each one of the buildings.
And I feel like it is like a double-edged sword, just like you said, because you don't want to have your child or any young person for that matter going somewhere where they have to get patted down before they go in there. But at the same time, as a parent, I'm like, well, you know, I want to see my daughter when she goes to school, and I want to make sure she comes home safe. Yeah. Is that going to prevent it? Like you said, is that going to prevent it 100%? No, but because it doesn't stop what's outside. But no, if you you're trying to keep your house safe,
you go to a concert or a basketball game, you know, or to the courthouse
or traveling.
You got to go through a metal detector.
It's just evolution right now.
For safety. Yeah. So, you know, it's going to happen to them at some point. So if it's about safety, let's go ahead and put them in the schools and let's make sure they're safe, you know.
So, Yolanda, Dr. Cargill, I'm sorry, I have to ask you something. So there was a situation, and I'm sorry, this is not part of the question, but there was a situation a few months ago where my daughter was, she's an eighth grader, and she was, her and a couple of her friends who happen to be Black as well, they were in a gym and they heard a white girl use the N-word. And when they confronted her and asked her about it, she ignored it. They went to administrators at the school at that time, and they didn't feel like that they got the answer that was deserved. So what my daughter and those friends did, they actually organized a walkout. I don't know if you saw it on the news. I was so happy. I was proud of my daughter because, and the little girls too. I told them how proud I was of them because they stood up on what they believed in. If they heard someone saying that, and it seems like per the handbook in Lee Summit, that child should have received a suspension, mm-hmm. And a referral to the superintendent, but all she got was a detention.
Gotcha.
How do you resolve situations? How do you resolve racial tensions in your district?
We just had this conversation this morning in terms of just me and members of my team, just preparation. Luckily, fingers crossed, just knock on wood, I hope that we don't, but we've not had a controversial situation like that. But the first thing that I would do is try to find out all the information that I could. Did it happen? Get statements and connect in with the students. What did you hear? Tell me more and learn all that I could about the situation. Work with the administrative. If it was a building level situation, work hand in hand with the administrator, making sure that they're conducting the investigation in a manner that allows them to really find out what happened. As a proactive measure, now what we're doing is providing the board approved racial equity training in Center School District. And so currently our board is participating in racial equity training, but it's the same trainer that they're using in Lee Summit.
Is that a good thing?
I love the trainers. They've done mm-hmm. a phenomenal job. So our board is participating in it, our district level leaders, myself. And we are starting with a group of teachers in July. And so this is now my second year in center. And so I started, in fact, when I interviewed for the position, that was one of the things that I advocated for in both of my interviews in terms of my ask to the Board of Education is, did they have the muscle to support in controversial situations around race and equity? If I was a person that was going to advocate for the rights of all children, would I have their support and what would that look like? As a Black female, realizing that I would, if hired, I was a first Black administrator, Black superintendent in the district, had they thought about what that could come with? You know, so I was real intentional around let's just have this conversation. And so as I enter Center School District, now we start all of our meetings. I even asked the board, like at every Board of Education meeting, we're reading a racial equity message. At each of the meetings that I'm leading, we're reading a message, but we're talking about it. Like, what does that look like, sound like in terms of our work? How does this resonate with you? It's to me, I mean, that's minor, but it keeps the topic always on our radar and awareness. And you may hear something that resonates with you or allows you to reflect on who you are and creates an opportunity to be more in tune to your unconscious bias and to learn more about races different than yours. And so like my mm-hmm. team is mixed between, you know, I have a Hispanic female on the team, it's white and Black members are on the team. And so a mixed race and mixed gender conversation around the work that we're able to do for children. And so we're taking a proactive stance. But to answer your question, I would definitely try to find all the answers possible, connecting with the parents, making sure that the information was shared and bringing them in, having a conversation. You know, are you having these conversations at home? What's your belief at home? Yeah. Is this something you perpetuate in the household? Is this something that right. you support?
Because personally, I don't want to see any child lose their education, be out of school and lose education.
But how do we make it right?
Let's make it right by having a conversation with these kids. Don't kick her out. Don't kick her out of school for saying that. But let's talk about it. Let's sit up there and have a conversation on why you felt like it was okay to say.
It's a restorative, it's a learning opportunity, but you can definitely use a restorative justice mentality around the whole situation. If there's some sense of remorse around it,
you know, like the acknowledgement that you did something that wasn't right, but how do you make it right? And what does that look like?
Right. And it shouldn't have taken a walkout of all the students, of 100, 150 students walking out for the administrators to come and address the issue.
Yeah, it shouldn't have.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Yolanda. So you said you're the first Black superintendent of Center School District.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also a female.
Woo!
So what are some of the challenges you've seen, you know, that maybe your white counterpart would not have to deal with?
The position itself in past years has been dominated just predominantly by white males. But that has begun to shift. There are more African-Americans that sit in the seat of superintendent. Can there be more? Absolutely. You know, when I in Missouri, there are still predominantly more white male superintendents. And so I think it's going to take over time, just the change in the mindset and the hiring process in terms of how boards and what boards are seeking in superintendents, but then also how we promote each other and move each other up. And so for me, I'm always trying to push members of my team to consider, or when I see like excellent leadership skills, like how can I push them into leadership roles or encourage them? Like I've worked in now Hickman Mills and Center School District. There have been now two Black females that I've had individual conversations with around the consideration for thinking about a superintendent role. I think that would be phenomenal. Moving into the position. And so asking them or suggesting different things that they should consider just in terms of preparation or participating in a superintendent leadership academies that provide those leadership opportunities for them to explore the position without actually serving in the position, or just creating additional leadership opportunities for them within the school district or different tasks that we're working on. But we have to pull each other up and create opportunities for others to get the experiences as well.
And it should,
would you say
it shouldn't take that long? Because look, we had Black principals, you know,
yeah.
Heck, we had Black principals when we was in school. So
yeah. Would you say Miss Nelson was an influence? Ago,
you know, so.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Elliott. Yeah.
You, yeah. Mr. Elliott?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Elliott and Miss Nelson?
What, yeah, are they? Sure. Yeah.
Did you ever see them? You ever see either one of them?
No.
Wow.
No.
Sweet.
I don't want to be mean, but are they still living?
Let's hope. Well, last question we'll ask you, and what are three books that you would recommend for either our young generation or a parent that wants to know more, be more educated? Well, what are three books that you would recommend?
See, I was thinking more or less around like, well, parents may like the one book that I was thinking of, and it's an easy read, and it's Unconscious Bias in Schools. And it's written by two principals, a white female and a Black male. Tracy Benson and Sarah Fearman. And it provides an insight of two building leaders and their own journeys and exploration around race and equity and what that has looked like in their interaction with children, and like them calling each other out for different things in terms of how they're interacting with children as well as leading their buildings. And in Center, we actually did a book study with members of the community as well as the board and all of our administrators on this book. And so there were some parents, as I would tweet out or make posts on Instagram, that said they were going to get the book. And so that's one book that I would suggest for our parents, Unconscious Bias in Schools. And when I say it's an easy read, it wasn't thick at all. And it's easy to track and follow.
Another, and I was.
And I'll just give you one. You ain't got three.
Thank you.
Well, Yolanda, this has been very enlightening.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming on.
Really appreciate I'm glad you guys asked me.
Yeah.
Folks, if you like this podcast, I need you to subscribe and like,
and follow. Sorry, I said it was going to be one last question. One more.
See, that
was family one. Moving. Families moving from Milwaukee to Kansas City. All right.
Okay.
Why would they? What would you say to sell them on Center, on the Center School District? Why choose Center?
Why choose Center School District? It's small, a small family center school district right in the center of Kansas City. So this small, nestled, quaint area, but still in a big city. So, and it's a diverse a community, a right blend of African-American, white, Hispanic, Asian, and other races all blended in one community, a committed group of educators as well as leaders. And still, like you asked, are we fully accredited? And we are. And so I would just say to our parents, we'd love to have you. Mm-hmm. And we are one high school district. So one high school, one middle school, four elementaries, one early learning center, and a Center Academy for Success. And so multiple programs for the student who doesn't like this large high school. We also have a smaller high school that were alternative school with alternative type programs. So just small enough and big enough to be just to offer the right programs for our children.
Nice. Thank you.
I like it.
Well, we sure appreciate you coming on. Jay, you got some last remarks, brother?
That's usually your thing, but
I mean, I could take it over, man.
I'm just gonna say, hang out for a minute, Yolanda, when we finish. But no, that's your thing, man. You got the last minute, last thing.
Well, we just want to thank Dr. Yoda. She just really just proved that Star Wars was true, because she's just taking on the persona of Yoda, and that's her nick. That's been her nickname since we was kids, and I can't call her anything else. But it's Dr. Yolanda now. Thank you very much for being on the show and sharing with us everything about your district, and taking pride and showing young females and males that they can strive in spite of anything. They can strive. And you didn't have a hard upbringing, but you are an African-American woman that has made it. I will say has made it, and still has so much more to do. So thank you again for being on. And with that, we're going to sign off here. Thank you guys for another great episode of the Kings Can Move On podcast.
If you enjoyed that episode, don't forget to subscribe and like us on our YouTube channel, and rate and follow us on your favorite podcast platforms.